This is New Classical Tracks from listener-supported American Public Media. If you're enjoying this podcast, the best thing that you can do for this show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. I talked with Joanne Folletta recently about a new recording that she and the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra recently released. It's called Echoes of Eastern Europe. And on this recording, it's a blending of the old and the new. She was especially excited to feature the violin concerto by David Serkin Ludwig. She met him in 2015 and really fell in love with his music, especially his violin concerto, which is heard on this recording. And then she discovered that his favorite symphony by Dvorak was the Symphony No. 7, which was also going to be featured on this recording. So we hear about both of these works and much more from Joanne Folletta this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Hello, Joanne Folletta. It is so good to talk with you again.
Hi, Julie. Delighted to have a chance to catch up with you. It's been a little while.
Yeah, and as usual, you are putting out really interesting recordings with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, and that's what we are here to talk about. I was refreshing my memory a little bit about how you are celebrating 25 years with this orchestra. And you've said that this is a middle-sized orchestra, and for you that means you guys have some flexibility, enough to attract superstars to come play with you, and then you also have the opportunity to do kind of unexpected things, too. And we're going to be talking about kind of one of those unexpected recordings and pieces that you have performed together. Before we do that, though, thinking about some of those superstars, I'm wondering, can you think of a superstar who said yes to you to come and play with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra that really surprised you when they said yes, they'd come?
Well, a lot of them, from Joshua Bell to Yo-Yo Ma to Ben Cliburn. We've probably had almost all the superstars in our country come and play with us, and we've had a great time together. So I think that the orchestra has a sort of reputation of maintaining excellence, even though we are not the biggest budget of the major symphonies. And as you said, Julie, that gives us a flexibility even about our repertoire. We can think outside the box. We're not sort of beholden to be a certain way or do a certain thing. So we can experiment, and we do a lot of different repertoire, old and new, and record in that way too.
Your latest recording is the world premiere recording of a violin concerto by David Serkin Ludwig. I want to start by asking you about his name, because he is related to a long line of very famous classical musicians. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, yes. Well, he is related to the Serkins. Rudolf Serkin, the great pianist, was his grandfather, and Peter Serkin was his uncle. So his mother was a Serkin, and he uses that as his middle name, and I think that's a nice thing, and Ludwig as his second name. But he has such a history of music, and that he's a very gentle, extremely modest person, so you'd never know the sort of heritage that he has, but certainly he, in his own right, is a fabulous composer, and I met him for the first time 2015 or 16, I think. It was a few years ago, and just fell in love with his music and with the piece that we recorded, his violin concerto.
Well, the piece that you recorded was commissioned by a consortium of eight major orchestras in 2015, and that's when this piece first came to light. Tell us about this work, and also how it relates to his lovely wife,
yes,
who is the featured soloist on this recording.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful story. And I had the pleasure of working with Bella Ristova, his wife, in Honolulu with the Hawaii Symphony. And she came, and we played a standard concerto together, but he came along with her. And I was so delighted to meet him because I had heard of David Ludwig and knew some of his music. And they told me about a piece that he had written for her as a wedding gift. And I thought this was so wonderful. Now, imagine getting that kind of a gift on your wedding, at your wedding. I mean, a gift written by your composer husband just for you. So I said to Bella, well, next time you come back to Hawaii and we're going to do that piece. And that's when I fell in love with the work. It's stupendous. And we later on then recorded it with the Buffalo Philharmonic. So it has a story. You know, David, of course, was very interested in her background. Bella grew up in Bulgaria, but her father was Russian. And she never really knew her father. He died when she was very, very young. But he was a Russian composer. And she had never been able to find any of her father's music. But David, but this is how the wedding gift started, actually researched a tremendous amount of music and found a violin concerto written by her father. And in that, he found a beautiful fragment of a melody that he used in the second movement of this concerto. So not only is it a gift from him, there's a short echo of the music of her father. And I think that was very precious to her, precious to them both.
Do you know how she felt about that? I mean, was that a surprise to her when she finally saw the work? Was that like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were doing this?
It was a big surprise. I mean, she might have known that he was looking, but not that he had ever found anything because she had not been able to find it. So in the second movement, there's a section that sounds very like it's drawn right from the folk music of Eastern Europe. And it's a very tender melody. And that's her father's theme. I think she was overwhelmed. And the whole idea of this wonderful piece just attracted me to it. The orchestras have loved playing it. And you know what's so refreshing about it, Julie? It's new music. I mean, it's music in David's voice. He's a young composer. Yet it makes a connection with the past. And that was the stimulus, the inspiration for this CD.
The title of this recording is Echoes of Eastern Europe. And this piece fits in so beautifully because David Ludwig is actually tapping into his own Eastern European roots, which come from his grandfather, who emigrated from what's now the Czech Republic. Can you talk a little bit about how we hear those influences in this work?
You're right, Julie. It's directly influenced by, Dvorak. I mean, David told me that Dvorak was a great inspiration. His music is an inspiration to him, particularly the Seventh Symphony, which was his favorite. He uses that connection to people because Dvorak, of course, loved his country of Bohemia at that time, Bohemia. He loved it. He loved the people. He loved the music. And he never forgot them, even though he was encouraged in his life to be more German and less Czech. It was not really politically correct to be Czech at that time. In fact, it was a kind of racism against the Czech people from the Austrians and the Germans. So Dvorak could have spoken German. He could have decided to change his name to Anton instead of Antonin, which the Germans wanted him to do. But he said, no, I'm faithful to my country. I love my people. And I am who I am. I'm a Czech composer and always will be in my heart. So that kind of loyalty and that connection to the earth and to people and folk music, I think inspired David to go back to those old Eastern European wedding ceremonies and capture some of that in a new piece.
Let's talk a little bit about what we are hearing, the sequence of events in this violin concerto, because it was written beautifully for his bride-to-be, and it does celebrate a traditional wedding ceremony. Can you talk a little bit about what we're hearing and what the visual images might be in each of these movements?
I will. I will. There are three movements. The first movement is called Dances. And of course, it's lively. I mean, it's the feeling of this is a wedding. I mean, everyone is happy. But it's filled with Bulgarian folk songs because that was her heritage. She grew up in Bulgaria. So there are some wildly rhythmic figures that certainly we as Western musicians don't often play. So celebratory and so joyful. The second movement in which her father's beautiful theme is placed is the ceremony. So there's a certain kind of processional feeling about it, a certain solemnity, a certain beauty as the bride and the groom pledge themselves to each other. And then the third movement again is wild celebration, again, more Bulgarian music. It starts off with a figure that is so rhythmically complex that the musicians just look at the conductor and said, "What? What is that?" It's one of these rhythmic things that we've never seen, we've never played. And I said, "You know what? Bella is going to play it for you because it's folk music from Bulgaria. And once you hear her play it, you can do it." And she did. She played that incredibly complicated rhythm. And then I said, okay, let's do it together. And they did it. And everyone laughed. I mean, it was like, we could never figure that out somehow. But she played it for us, and it felt like, yeah, we can do that. I mean, it felt so natural. And sometimes folk music is deceptively difficult, but if you grow up with it, if you hear it all the time, if it's in your heart, you know, you can just do it. But I remember all of us laughing because she made it so easy for us by just playing it, and then off we went. And then a funny kind of Bulgarian dance at the end called the Crooked Dance. Bella about this, and she said, well, that's what we do at the end of the wedding, because the weddings go on to the small hours of the morning, and people kind of stagger out of the restaurant or the wedding hall, and try to make their way home with this crooked dance. It's something that's so real, and she had experienced it certainly, and David recapturing it for her in a new voice. And that's really what I love, Julie, the idea of the connection between old and new. You know, I always feel that composers are part of a continuum, that no matter how wild their new music is in the 21st century, they go back to the voices of Bach and Handel and even Vivaldi. They're influenced in some way with this wonderful continuum, this wonderful trajectory, this history of music. And this was a perfect way to tie the influence of Antonin Dvorak, who had so much importance to our country, that he was here and teaching, to David as a new young voice in music, but also paying a tribute to the past.
Did I hear you say that Dvorak's Seventh Symphony was one of David's favorite symphonies?
Yes. When I told David that I'd like to make the disc have these two aspects of it, old and new, and I was going to put our performance, our recording of Dvorak's Seven on it, he said to me, how did you know that the Seventh is my favorite? And I didn't, but it is certainly, in many people's minds, the masterpiece. I mean, Dvorak's great masterpiece, and he wrote this right at the time he was re-vowing to be true to the Czech people, and he was having a lot of trouble. You know, the Sixth Symphony, the one that came right before this, was supposed to be performed in Vienna. And at the last moment, the Viennese orchestra refused to play it because it was by a Czech composer. You know, we don't imagine that those things happened, and they did. So Dvorak had to bring it to the Czech Republic, to Prague, to have it played. He suffered a lot with that feeling of, you know, you're not one of us. You're a bohemian. You're a Czech person. So in writing the Seventh Symphony, it was his kind of testament to his people that this is who I am, and you will hear yourself in this music, and certainly you do. I mean, it's a piece of great profundity, but also a lot of authentic Czech folk songs too.
Dvořák was beloved by British audiences at the end of the 19th century, and the London Philharmonic Society commissioned this symphony. Can you talk about what else was happening in the life of Dvořák when he was writing this work? Because some pretty important things were happening, and they're reflected in the music.
Yes, yes. I mean, as I was saying, he's in a politically a difficult situation. You know, Brahms was his hero and his champion, and Brahms encouraged him to be himself and write in a Czech style, but many people did not. So he had to make a lot of difficult decisions, and he even realized that he was probably impeding what might have been a personally more advantageous career, but it didn't mean anything to him. He had to be true to himself. And I think the English people were very touched by his sincerity, his realness in his music. And I am too. There's a feeling of great connection to people and great love for a place and love for your countrymen that we don't hear in other composers, but we hear it in Dvořák. And even after this, soon after this, he came to the United States. As you know, Julie, he was brought to New York City to teach, to help young American composers of that time, this is late 19th century, try to discover how to write an American music, because it was so recognized that Dvořák represented his people, and that's who he was writing about. How could we learn as Americans to do that? And he stayed a couple of years in the United States doing exactly that, helping young Americans find a way to incorporate their folk music, their people, their country into their music. And it culminated with him writing his final symphony, the New World Symphony, which is very beloved as well.
I also read that when he was writing this symphony number 7, he had also recently lost his mother. And I'm wondering if some of the grief he was experiencing comes through in this work. And if so, where might we hear that?
Well, Julie, you are right. I mean, it's in a very dark key, and that was a little unusual for him. But the tenderness of the second movement especially, which is done with great, profound feeling, I think in a way was his love for his mother, the beauty of his mother, the way he treasured her and his whole family. He was devoted to his family. So I think that his work was colored by that loss. I mean, the loss of a person he loved greatly, just as the Ninth Symphony, years later, was colored by the loss of his sister-in-law, who was very close to him and caused him to change the ending of the New World Symphony from what it was originally. So this was a man who responded to the people he loved. I think that's what makes his music, to me, so special, that true sincerity and affection.
You've talked a little bit about the discrimination that he faced for being Czech, and there was an interesting story that I found about the first theme of this symphony and how it was inspired by the patriotism of his fellow countrymen who took a train from Hungary to Prague for a concert and also a political demonstration. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story? And also, if you could identify where we hear that theme.
Well, I think that people hearing this may be surprised, because it comes from a very dark place, the very beginning of the symphony, this kind of rumble. Some portent of of unhappiness or tragedy, and we hear that. But there's also tremendous strength in it as well, as if, you know, we are not giving up. We're not giving up who we are. We will stand together. And in this symphony, we hear that. We hear him at his strongest feeling of unity with the Czech people when it was most threatened by the Austrians and Germans, when they were really making it very difficult to be a Czech composer. You were not one of the inner circle. So, but the wonderful thing is that the journey of this symphony at the end, it is so brilliantly in a major key. Just really a triumph.
I'm looking at when each of these pieces was recorded, because I know often you record your pieces live in concert and then they make their way onto recordings. Is that what happened this time as well?
That's what happened as well, because Julie, we did them at different times, and we sometimes send them to Naxos, who distributes them just digitally for us. But this time we hadn't, and I thought, you know, this is maybe a gift that we have now that we have not released the Dvorak Seventh yet, and we have this brand new American concerto that ties into Dvorak and his interest in America and David's, you know, connection through Rudolf Serkin to the Czech Republic. It seemed like too special not to put them on the same disc. So we did.
Do you have a favorite section in this Seventh Symphony that you just get really excited about every time you get there with the orchestra?
Well, there are two, and they're so different. I can't really pick. One is that second movement, which is this most tender love letter to his mother. It's so extraordinarily beautiful. And the other is the third movement. Which is a furiant. A furiant is a Czech dance. I mean, just like we had the Bulgarian dances in Bella's piece, this is an authentic, absolutely authentic Czech dance, and it's wild. It's absolutely wild. So that one is totally fun to play, the third movement, and it sort of makes us see Dvorak in the light of someone who loved his people and singing and dancing with them.
You've been with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra 25 years, and yet you still have so much enthusiasm about everything that you all have planned. What keeps you so excited to work with this ensemble?
It's the musicians, Julie. I mean, they are so excited about their orchestra. And they're all for all ages. You know, we have some people who have been with us decades and still love making music together, and a lot of young people who are coming joining us. So it's a very wonderful team of not only excellence, but good spirit to each other. So I think that keeps me really excited about what we can do in the future. And the future looks good.
Joanne Folletta talking about her latest recording with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. It's called Echoes of Eastern Europe. Thanks to Valerie Kaler. She's our producer of new classical tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher.